Now, we're back. We're joined by Bill Ebrill from South Dublin, Dalkey area. Can you tell us how you got into radio?
Somewhere back in the 60s, when Radio Caroline, the ship, went on the air, I used to listen to Radio Caroline, and I used to do what's called DXing, listen to stations that are in the distance.
Yeah.
And I managed to track all the 10 pirate stations around the UK at the time.
That were on ships, and some of them were
Radio
in
Radio London, Radio Caroline South, Caroline North, 390, there's a whole bunch of them. And then in 1967, the Marine Offences Act closed down the pirates. And myself and some other friends got together. The Irish Free Radio Association was the first kind of group that started to campaign for free radio in Ireland. Then a group called the Irish Radio Movement became another lobby group. We just wrote to the Department of Post and Telegraphs looking for licenses, looking for free radio. Nothing doing. Yeah. The same old attitude to the 1926 Wireless Telegraphy Act, which was...
Yeah.
You know, only established RTE and nothing else, you know.
So going back to your listening days in the 60s, the early 60s, what sort of equipment were you using? What kind of radio? Do you remember the radio?
It was just an ordinary medium wave Pi radio, domestic Pi. Radio.
Transistor?
Valve one.
Valve, and a big aerial out
big
the back.
Big aerial out the back garden. And
long
I was
wire,
able to pull a long wire down the garden, which subsequently became a transmitting aerial, but back then it was just a receiving aerial.
Brilliant.
And that got my interest going. I used to listen to Caroline 24/7, you know, it was on all the time.
And would you be down in the kitchen or up in your room or
everywhere around the house?
Everywhere.
Valve radio out in the back
what,
garden.
What age were you then? You
13.
13, so you started young. Yeah.
And then,
And so you got the 10 stations. Was there anything happening on the Irish side? When was the first kind of Irish pirates you pulled in?
I wasn't aware. There were some going way back, but what happened is, as the Irish radio movement kind of, we were just... people got fed up and started to build their own transmitters and started to go on the air.
Yeah.
So there would have been around the time I built a station called Radio Caroline Dublin,
which was
a tribute station
to Radio Caroline.
And a friend of mine in the school in presentation built a station called Radio Amo. His name was Amo.
Yeah.
And then another guy in Blackrock had a station called Channel 70.
Channel 70 Blackrock.
And they were the real hobby pirate days.
What year are we talking there?
We're talking about 1970-ish.
1970. Yeah. So
we had been campaigning since the 1967 Act came in. We'd been campaigning to try and get independent radio. They introduced Radio 1 in England to try and,
play some pop for the kids. Yeah. And
So over that period, the early 70s, it was hobby pirates.
Yeah, hobby pirates.
How did you get the
diagrams to make transmitters? Did you take an interest, go down the library? How did you find?
I used to repair radios, so I had some idea of how things worked. I was planning to be an engineer when I grew up, so I was very interested in the electronic stuff.
Okay.
But Dunleary Library, section 621 was the section that you got the books in.
Yeah.
And there was no internet. You had to write away for stuff.
Yeah. Well, Practical Wireless magazines.
Practical Wireless, Wireless World, all of those magazines.
Okay.
Taking amateur radios and modifying them to the frequencies that you wanted, which was the medium wave at that stage. They were all medium wave transmitters.
And they were all valve-based then as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Were you dealing with high voltages for them? You're talking...
Yeah, about 1,000 volts.
1,000 volts. And you'd step that up and...
Yeah, got transformers. When it got... You know, as they got more sophisticated, there were people who would make a transformer for us. So you get the transformer made with the voltages you wanted.
Yeah.
Get your modulation transformers made.
And did you ever get down to Clifford's on Talbot Street?
I went to Clifford's many times, yes.
And he could source your parts. And would he have a little joke? He'd know what you were up to.
Most of the stuff was being sourced from England.
Okay, and you could get that in the post?
Or go to London. There was the place called Lyle Street, which was an amateur radio place, and you could buy your old parts, the valves, the 813s, which were the transmitting valves, the valve bases and all that, all of which were hard to come by because we didn't have a surplus industry in Ireland.
There was
in England.
And also our military surface stuff probably just wasn't much of it, and they probably held on to everything they had.
Not in Ireland. In England, there was a big market for that stuff.
You said the 813 valve.
Yeah.
Do you remember the output power of an 813?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was getting like 150 watts out of it. I'd use two in parallel to get it, okay, to build a 300 watt transmitter.
300 watts, so you...
Yeah, my first transmitter was an 807.
807, 40 watts, I presume, yeah.
I had three of them.
Three of them.
In parallel, giving me 100 watts, roughly.
Brilliant.
Into my garden aerial.
And you're saying 1,000 volts. Did you have to rectify that down to DC then? After,
You'd have like a 500 transformer. Rectify valves originally, and then a rectifier, silicon rectifiers.
Could you get rid of all the hum? Yes. You know, the AC hum?
There was no hum.
No hum. You were able to get good smoothing capacitors.
I prided myself in good quality.
Yeah, very good, very good. And would you operate these from your house then?
In the early days, yes. The Tribute Station I ran every Friday night from midnight to about 1:30 a.m. And then on a Sunday at lunchtime from about 12:30 to 1 or 2 o'clock.
Brilliant.
And that was it. I recorded programs in a studio. Got DJs in to record programs. Ronan Collins used to record programs for us.
So you'd pre-record your programs.
Yeah, we didn't want to lose the studio in a raid.
Okay.
So the studio was worth more than the transmitters. So
yeah,
we recorded the programs in a very professional studio, taped them, and then the transmitter and the tape recorder were expendable.
Very good. So did you ever have any electrocutions or fires or any negative...
I nearly electrocuted myself a couple of times. Some bad shocks, but nothing serious.
I do remember myself working with 807 valve, 600 volts DC, and not getting the usual buzz of when you're being electrocuted. You'd usually, on AC, you'd get a jump, but the electrocution on DC was so smooth that you were like stuck to it, and having to try and fall away one time from being stuck to the anode on the top. I'd have a phase tester on the top of the anode, and I'd be tuning the variable capacitors, trying to get as much output power into a light bulb as a dummy load. And I remember once getting stuck so badly that I had to make myself fall over to disconnect. So luckily enough, we haven't lost. I didn't hear of anyone ever dying from pirate radio, but I thought I felt then I got close. You know,
no, I used to smell burning flesh occasionally from the aerial. If you had an aerial tuning unit to match the transmitter to the aerial, and that kind of, if that burnt you, it created a kind of a deep burn.
An RF burn,
and then you had a smell of burning flesh, which wasn't pleasant. Those were, but they didn't give you the shock that the DC...
I suppose you were a microwave in your hand in some way.
That's
it
doesn't bear thinking about.
Yeah, at a lower frequency than microwave is currently now. Did you move on then to more solid state transmitters, or did you stay with
I had my own station. Then things got a bit too hot. The P&T were tracking stations down. They got to my house one night, and I decided to move the transmitter the next day and lead them in a different direction. But at that stage, it was getting too close.
There was a full-time detection unit out there looking for...
It wasn't full-time. I actually knew the guy indirectly, a guy called Tom Callender. But his job was trying to track down these stations, and then they'd bring the guards in and raid.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
And did you ever actually end up getting a real raid in the end? Or?
No, I got a visit from the special branch, but that was to do with... They were worried at the time that transmitters would fall into the hands of the IRA.
Republicans,
and that was a worry.
Yeah.
And that was my parents' biggest worry. Not the transmitting. They knew that was a fun thing.
Yeah.
But the IRA kind of taking over a station was not fun.
So you kind of got a warning from the special branch saying, look...
No, they just came and said, my name was found in the diary of an activist. And they were just checking up how it might have got there. But I think somebody just noted my name as a transmitter builder or something.
Yeah, I had a similar situation in one of the stations we operated in 1985. It was an FM 15 watt transmitter, but immediately the department sent a local ham down to have a word with us, They didn't come in themselves.
Right.
But he was able to tell us things like they knew the colour of the carpet, the posters on the wall, what the studio was set up like. They had been in our studio when we weren't there, and they had this. Their problem was that this transmitter we had originated up north and had been used in Republican transmissions.
All right, yeah.
And they were wondering what our source was, which we had to obviously say we cannot tell you. But they warned us off our source and said not to deal with that source in the future.
Yes.
They probably knew, and they wanted us to pinpoint the name. We couldn't. So what was the biggest transmitter you've built?
I shut myself down after that visit. And a few years later, I ended up passing by Radio Dublin. And I called in. I just, for interest's sake, I called in. I met Eamon Cook, and he had a pretty amateur transmitter, and I offered to build him a new transmitter.
So you built one for him, yeah?
And I built the first one when he went from amateur Sundays to 24/7, just before Christmas. I built him that transmitter, and he went on the air, put steel shutters in the covering his main door and the stairs, and he went on 24/7, and that was the start of Radio Dublin.
Yeah, and do you remember the size of that transmitter, or?
That was 2813s.
2813s. So
push-pull arrangement.
So you're getting, were you getting 200 watts from that?
I would say good 200 watts out of it.
And was the antenna vertical or horizontal?
It was a pole at the end of his garden, yeah. Up onto the roof, and then from the top of the roof down to the pole at the end of the garden.
So an inverted V kind of...
Just a wire.
Just a wire.
It wasn't even anything. You couldn't even call it an inverted V.
And would have been tuned to an ATU.
An ATU would have brought it to resonance. And then
two things. What year and what range would you be talking? What range were you getting from them?
That was I think it was Christmas 1977 or 78. I'm not good on dates.
Yeah.
But it was when he decided to go. It was when the amateur, the home base stations went professional.
Yeah.
Because from that day, Eamon stayed on, and then ARD and others picked up, and that was the start of, the commercialization of the hobby pirates had become semi-legit.
Yeah. And do you remember how far the transmission signal went, how far it traveled?
It rivaled the RTE Dublin transmitter at the time, so it was available all over Dublin.
All over Dublin, like from, say, Dunleary to Howth.
Yeah, the whole of Dublin was well covered by it.
With 200 watts.
Yeah,
that's very, very good.
Yeah, there was no competition, I suppose.
Less interference. Daytime. There wasn't many other stations. You'd have had a few British stations, a few European stations at nighttime coming.
Nighttime
in.
You get interference at night, the range would drop, but during the day. Anybody with a decent... A lot of people had valve radios and good transistor radios.
And
so
most people would have just had standard ferret, internal ferret rod antennas and they just have to move the set around to point towards Inchicore,
right.
Probably, was it?
Inchicore, yeah.
Yeah. Sarsfield Road.
Sarsfield Road.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I do remember visiting there sometime in the 70s and he had a very tall mast. He must have gone for a vertical at one stage. For the AM, which has got to be, could be 50 metres.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that high, but pushing that, yes. There was a bunch of guys that used to put up aerials, and they became the aerial by appointment to the pirate stations,
Yeah. And I'd say, going back then, it wasn't hard to find an aerial man, because every television, if you wanted to pick up British TV, you probably had a... As much as you have a Sky installer, man, you had an antenna man in those days,
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, anything else? Any other big memories that you'd like to just bring
to
the
recording?
Well,
I built about 10 other transmitters.
You built 10 others?
Yes.
Yeah. What sort of stations were they for?
Carousel.
in Drogheda.
He had one in Navan, in Drogheda, in Dundalk, on top of the Dundalk shopping centre, was his big one. And then he built one in a field overlooking Newry. 60 metres from the border. That was the most hairy one, with a British Army helicopter watching us installing it, and then I did one for a crowd in Kilkenny Community Radio, Tralee, Carlow, and then I built some FM transmitters after that.
You started on FM, and did you stay with Valve for FM as well?
No, transistorized.
Transistor.
They were smaller, 100 watt.
100 watt, yeah.
FM transmitters.
And did you get into stereo encoders or any of that?
No.
Or that was much later.
Yeah. People bought stereo encoders and you plugged them in
front of the audio.
But the transmitter wouldn't have contained the...
Yeah. The 100 watts, very good. It's great to have you in.
Okay, no problem. Oh, it's a story that needs to be told. I mean, I think...
It is.
It's a fun story. It was a huge part of my life, you know? So. Yeah.
And today, have you any hobbies related to radio that you still keep up listening or...
No, my interest these days is still electronics as a hobby. But I became an amateur radio operator, but it's like CB. The fun was building the transmitters, not operating them.
And testing them out and getting them on. Well, listen, thanks very much for coming in. We're going to get some more interviews in. Have a walk around, chat with everyone that might bring up memories, and if there's any space at the end of the day, you can come back with what you've learned today from talking to others. Thanks again, Bill.
Okay, cheers. Thanks a lot. See you.